Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Around the world, the trip begins with a kiss. Roam if you want to, roam around the world. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard another edition of Peter Greenberg Worldwide. I hope you're having a wonderful last weekend of the year 2011. Yes, summer is over. I know it. Wherever you may be. Last week, you know, we were coming to you from Hong Kong and our trip through Asia. This week, get out your maps, boys and girls. 8 degrees, 4 minutes north, 98 degrees, 55 minutes east. Let me just say, Sawadika. We are coming to you from Phule Bay, a Ritz-Carlton Reserve Hotel, back actually in the southern part of Thailand on the island of Krabi. And we're taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phone, you know the deal. You email me to peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. In the interest of full disclosure, I have to admit a long-standing love affair with this country. And for those people who listen to the show regularly, you know I also live in Thailand. I have a place in Bangkok and have had it for over 20 years. So you don't need an industrial-strength spatula to force me to come here. And I'm very happy to be here to celebrate the new year with you. And speaking of the new year, let's talk about the old year, because there's so many things that are left unresolved. And one, of course, is the question we're continuing to get: what does the American Airlines bankruptcy mean to you? In the short run, I keep telling everybody, not much as a consumer. In the long run, it means a lot. You're going to see an airline shrink. And the first place you're going to see it shrink is in their subsidiary known as American Eagle. They've been trying to dump that airline anyway, and now they're going to use the bankruptcy as an opportunity to cut back as many things as they can, and that's starting with flights. So if you're living in a small community that was being served by American Eagle, watch out. We're going to start seeing a lot of small communities without significant air service, or in some cases, air service at all in the coming year, and that is a dangerous thing. Speaking of the coming year, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit later in the show, but what can we expect coming up in the next year? Is it going to be good news or bad news? You know what, guys? It's going to be ugly news. That's right. The airline's going to search for even more ways to charge you for something. And so will hotels. And but listen to this. The airlines are now trying to do something, but it's of their own making. It started with them, right? They're going to charge you to check a bag, right? So what do people do? They will do everything they possibly can not to check that bag and bring it on the plane. I mean, anything their dead grandmother, a stuffed moose, anything they can do to bring that thing on the plane, they're going to do it as part of their carry-on bag. So now the airlines are now figuring out a way to charge you for the carry-on bag, okay? So get ready. If you overstuff your carry-on bag, there may be a fee for that. Now, you want to see fistfights starting at the airport? That's going to happen. It's going to happen at the gate because some well-intentioned but often moronic gate agent is going to try to enforce that rule with somebody who is a frequent flyer who may have one or two extra magazines in their bag, and the cops are going to get called. It's going to be crazy. But you know what? It's already starting. Hawaiian Airlines has already established a 25-pound, so it's a weight issue too, limit for carry-on bags, and if it doesn't weigh, if it weighs more than that, then guess what? $25 for a checked bag, $35 for the second. Now, here's the problem. My carry-on bag is an open duffel. It's like an open tote bag. I wouldn't check that if the world was coming to an end. So I'd like to see them enforce this. This is going to get a little crazy. So get ready for that. And there is a move afoot, which, by the way, I don't necessarily oppose. And, of course, it's never going to happen, but it makes for interesting conversation. If you have a thought on this, I'd love to hear from you on this. There is a move afoot to establish a dress code for flying. I'm all in favor of that. I really am. I'm old enough to remember when you actually dressed for a flight. It was a very important experience in your life. I'm not saying we have to do black tie on the plane, but I don't think cutoffs, flip-flops, and tank tops for people who hadn't looked in the mirror lately to realize they shouldn't be wearing any of those outfits should be allowed to be sitting next to me. I'm sorry. I think we should start an airline right now called What Were You Thinking? They just have an airline with mirrors at each seat and call the airline, what were you thinking? Right? Okay. Anyway, so much for that. But the bottom line is that's actually being discussed, right? A dress code. Now, what are you going to have? You know, somebody from Bravo at the gate to tell you that you're just not cool enough to get on the plane? You could actually make money. If the airlines were smart, they'd actually establish a plane or an airline that actually gave you frequent fashionista awards. And the better you dressed, the more miles you earned. You make it an incentive. And people would actually like try to look nice on the plane. You know? I think it's a good idea. And one interesting development that just happened, you heard me talk about this on the air before. It's been growing in popularity for quite some time. Nobody really wants to talk about it at the U.S. State Department, but I'm going to talk about it now. More and more Americans are going to Cuba. They're going legally now because the Obama administration lifted the restrictions on who could qualify to go, and now you can go under any organized, quote-unquote, educational research trip. Sort of like, educate me about my mojito trip. I mean, that's how, you know, easy it is to go to Cuba now. And some congressmen are trying to start a bill to basically put a tight limit on the trips, and guess what? It's not going to get through the House of Representatives. It's dying. So I think what's going to happen is by the end of this coming year, the restrictions are going to be relaxed even more. Even though it's an election year, remember this. No U.S. president ever wanted to recognize Cuba in the first term because they were too worried about the second term and the Florida vote. Obama, in the last election, didn't need the Florida vote to get elected. And I don't think there's enough on the Florida vote now to go anti-Castro anymore, because all the old anti-Castro Cubans are what? Well, they're getting older. And there's a new wave of a new generation of people who want to look at a much more commonsensical approach to normalizing relations with Cuba, and it's happening as we speak. I was down there 3 months ago for CBS News. I'm doing a book on it right now. The bottom line is, by the end of the coming year, you're going to be able to go anytime you want. Right now, and nobody even talks about this, there are over 300 scheduled commercial, not charter, commercial flights a month from Miami to Havana. That means they're doing at least 10 a day. And they're filling the planes. And they're not filling the planes just with refugees and relatives. They're filling the planes with Mrs. Schmidlap from Peoria, who always wanted to go to Cuba. And you know what? I'm all in favor of Mrs. Schmidlap going to Cuba. And so is Cuba, by the way. You want to know how you can tell that things are changing in Cuba, how they're becoming more capitalist than ever? Raul Castro, Fidel's brother, who's now in control, is building golf courses and condominiums in Cuba and allowing for foreign ownership. Think about what that means. That was impossible. You couldn't even think about that a year ago or 2 years ago. And you can actually trace which countries are becoming more democratic and more capitalistic by which ones are building golf courses as opposed to which ones are tearing them down. Guess which country is destroying their golf courses? Venezuela. And isn't it ironic that Hugo Chavez, his idol, is Fidel Castro? Somebody better wake him up, because they're building golf courses in Cuba. We'll be back with more from Poulet Bay on the island of Krabi in Thailand. More Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after these messages.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
It's 18 minutes after the hour. Peter Greenberg with you from Poulet Bay on the island of Krabi in Thailand. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. We got a lot of emails to deal with a little bit later in the show. And as I do every week at this time on the show, I encourage you to go to our website, petergreenberg.com, for one more important reason, and that's to see our comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that hard and essential work in places like Japan and Haiti, in Western China, in Chile, and in Christchurch, New Zealand. All of those locations, victims of earthquakes or tsunamis over the last 2 years. And of course, who can forget what happened in this country, in Thailand, in the year 2004, that devastating tsunami that happened all around here and throughout the Indian Ocean that took so many lives, not far from here, by the way, in Thailand. So please look at that list. And the most important reason why you want to look at that list is to see how many different ways you can relate to the organizations doing that hard work and how you can get actively, personally, and up close involved on location with their endeavors. And for those people listening who've got children over the age of 8, many of these programs allow you to bring your kids. It's a life-changing experience for them as well. So check it out. A little bit later in the show, we'll be talking to Richard Walden, the CEO of Operation USA, a great charitable organization. In the interest of full disclosure, I also serve on the board of that organization, and he can let you know how you can get involved with the work that they're doing, not just here in Thailand, but worldwide. I got to stop right now with the stupid story of the year, listen to this. On a flight from Florida to Germany, a German tourist was so desperate to relieve himself shortly after takeoff that he couldn't wait any longer. Now, the fastened seatbelt sign was on. The flight attendants told him he couldn't leave his seat, and they insisted he stay in his seat. Finally, he just, couldn't hold it any longer, so he actually jumped up. I'm laughing as I'm really shouted in German, "I have to go, otherwise I'm going to explode." Well, you know what happened next. Hearing the words, "Ich explodiere," the cabin crew, who spoke no German, assumed he was a suicide bomber and told the pilot, who dumped all his fuel and made an emergency landing at Fort Lauderdale. He was then promptly arrested and imprisoned for 10 months, awaiting trial. Let's hope they had a lavatory in his cell. Wait, when his case eventually came to court, the judge dismissed it as ridiculous and apologized to him. But the story doesn't end there. Even then, it got worse. The minute he walked out of court, he was rearrested because his tourist visa had expired. This is not funny anymore. but we're all laughing. Oh, my God. And he was sent back to prison in Miami to await deportation. Oh, my God. So the moral to the story is just pee in your pants at your seat. Will you please just pee in your pants at your seat and life will get better. It won't be the most comfortable flight, but you'll avoid at least 10 months in prison. What a perfect segue to my next guest, a regular on our show, and the founder of AirfareWatchdog.com, George Hoboka. Hey, George.
Hey, Peter. You know, some people have peed in their seat, so they're smart, I guess.
Yeah, and you know who one of them was? It was Gerard Depardieu.
That's
right. Remember him?
Oui.
I know. I didn't say that. You did. Hey, here we are. We're at the dawn of a new year. It's coming around the corner faster than we can imagine, like within the next 24 hours. What's changed in the last year, and what do you need to know to get ready for this brave new world of airfares in the year 2012?
Well, certainly airfares are up. Priceline just did their report about actual sold airfares, and they say they're up 15% year over year. The good news is we're coming into one of the cheapest periods of the year to travel, which is just in a few days, January 4th to February 15th. There's going to be some great bargains out there. We saw flights from Portland to San Francisco, for example, for a 118 round trip. It's very rarely that cheap. So it's a good time to fly the next couple of weeks. And the other thing is we've seen consolidation in the airlines, and I think we're going to see American consolidate. You know, they just announced reductions in staffing, routes, and fleet. And a smaller American airlines is less likely to raise the hackles of antitrust watchdogs. They could combine more easily with another airline. So I think we may see some more consolidation in 2012.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised to watch U.S. Airways try to buy American Airlines.
Sure. I mean, a lot of people think it doesn't make sense hub-wise, but Americans are going to close some of their hubs and reduce some of their routes, and U.S. Airways could do the same thing or de-emphasize hubs just like Delta did in Cincinnati. So I think we're going to see some more consolidation. I don't think American wants to remain a distant third forever.
But, you know, when you start getting rid of hubs, like you mentioned, or not getting rid of, but really severely reducing them, like what Delta did in Cincinnati or what Delta did in Memphis, you know, the bottom line is when you have a shrinking airline and you have fewer planes flying fewer routes with fewer seats, the law of supply and demand kicks in, George. That's why airfares are going up.
Absolutely. No, but there is a silver lining, and that is that a larger airline like United has so many hubs that they still maintain that if your flight is canceled, they will reroute you through Cleveland, which is a former continental hub, instead of Chicago. So there is an advantage to flying a very, very large airline like United or Delta.
I know. If you get a chance to have that cancellation happen at the right time, at the right place, if all the planets are aligned and Uranus is in the right hemisphere, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, but in general, we're going to see, I think, demand on international flights is up. I was just talking to a PR person for Swissair, and I asked her, why are the fares to Switzerland so high? And she said, it's demand. It's simply demand. Even with the crisis in Europe, we're just seeing a lot more Europeans still flying to the United States. And, of course, they have to go back unless they overstay their visas, like your friend. And
But you see, but George, you see, I have another theory. I have a theory about why demand to Switzerland is so high.
Anytime
Goldman Sachs gives their bankers bonuses, they all go to Switzerland.
To deposit the money, right? Exactly. Some people think the euro is going to be on parity with the dollar in 2012. So that's going to make a lot of more people in the United States want to go to Europe because it's just going to be a bargain.
Once the euro drops any more, it becomes a buyer's market for us when it never was. I mean, I remember when the euro was about $1.60, $1.70. It's been hovering at about $1.30 now, which is a dramatic drop.
Absolutely, and it's making everything cheaper in Europe, including hotels and rental cars and whatever. So I think we are seeing pent-up demand, and that is keeping fares to Europe high. We did see some really great business class fares, however, and I think we may see some softening there, especially as the banks keep on laying off workers, which they seem to be doing every day now. So, there'll be fewer business travelers going back and forth to the business capitals of Europe. So we may see some deals. One thing I noticed, too, is that airlines are redeploying their European flights, their European aircraft to domestic routes. I just flew from Seattle to New York, and I was in an international Delta plane with, 50 business class seats, and that was because they weren't able to sell the international fares at the prices they want, so they just move the plane to a domestic route.
Well, there are some secret flights like that. There's a United Airlines flight that goes from Washington, D.C. to L.A. once a night just because they need to reposition the plane out to L.A., and it's a 777 with three classes of service, but it's only sold as first class and coach, so if you buy the right ticket at the right time, you're going to end up in business class for a coach fare.
I did not know that. I will definitely look at that.
Aren't you glad you called in?
I am. I mean, you always know stuff that I don't know. And I think, of course, I think I know everything, but I don't. But no, I think we're definitely going to see more higher fares and more consolidation. And I think we have to rethink what a low fare is. So, it's just a readjustment of expectations.
And, of course, one item that we'll probably not have enough time to talk about today, but it's going to be big on my radar for this year, is when you have that kind of shrinkage and you have that kind of capacity reduction, it devalues. It has nowhere to go but down the worth of your frequent flyer miles, because there's no incentive whatsoever for the airlines to give you a frequent flyer ticket if it's going to displace revenue passengers.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what the airlines are trying to do is to convince people to use those miles for upgrades. That requires more miles in some cases. I was actually sitting next to a Delta Airlines board member on this flight, and that's what she told me. She said they're actually trying to get the frequent flyer members to spend on upgrades to business and first class rather than to use it just for flights, for economy class flights. And that's how I use my miles. I will it's silly to spend 50,000 miles on a $300 ticket. I'd rather spend 30,000 miles on upgrading a round-trip fare to business class. That might cost me $2,000 or $3,000 if I did it using cash.
And that's assuming you can actually get the seat on the plane. If you do, you got to call me and let me know, okay?
I always do, actually, because I just take the – I call United, for example, and I ask them, where are the seats available?
And you know what? If they're honest, they'll tell you, and maybe you'll plan your trip based on where the seats are as opposed to where you want to go. George Hovica, the founder of AirfareWatchdog.com. He has no life. They update their fares 250,000 times a day. We'll be back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide from Poulet Bay, a Ritz-Carlton Reserve, right here on the island of Krabi in Thailand.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from Phule Bay in the island of Krabi in Thailand. One of my favorite places in the world, actually. I've been coming for over 20 years, and if you get a chance, you need to get out here. An amazing, not just destination, an amazing experience. And taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question or problem. I'll solve it right here on the air. And I guess I might as well say it now. If you don't hear me come back on the radio for the next couple of weeks, I'll tell you why, because I haven't left this location. Actually, I have to come back, but I don't want to. My next guest... the first time I met him was at the Ritz-Carlton Half Moon Bay in California at a big party for a friend of mine, and a pretty wild party, I might add, in terms of being a challenge for any chef anywhere. And I walked into Phule Bay here, and here he is. I mean, first of all, it was a pleasant shock, but no bigger shock, I'm sure, it was as for you when you had to go from California to Thailand and learn a whole new sensibility of things, a whole new culture, a whole new way of cooking. And his name is Gaetan Bezos. Hey, how are you, man?
How are you, Peter?
I am good. So here you are, born in Lyon, hanging out in California, yeah. And now you're in Thailand. Talk about globalization, right?
It's a pretty big trip.
It is a pretty big trip. How did you immerse yourself here? Because for anybody coming to any foreign country, it's one thing, but you have language issues, you have culture issues, you have food sourcing issues, and you have a whole different way of cooking issue.
Mm-hmm. The first one is the culture. The culture is very different than anywhere else I went in the world, from Dubai to D.C. to California.
Can I tell you what the culture is? It's nice.
Yes. It feels too real to be
it's
true.
There's the old Groucho Marx line, I would never join a club that would have me as a member. And when I first came to Thailand, I kept on thinking, why are people being so nice to me? They must be meeting somebody else. They must have made a mistake. And then I realized it had nothing to do with me. It had to do with who the Thai people really are. And they've not only defined it, they've refined service. And they've refined a certain sensitive approach to life that you find your pulse rate going down. You find, you don't raise your voice. Right? You actually lower your voice.
Mm-hmm, exactly. You have to be very calm all the time because everybody's watching you even if you don't know. So it's very important that you keep your calm no matter what happens.
So basically, Gordon Ramsay wouldn't work here.
No. Even for a French chef, it's very difficult.
So no screaming in the kitchen?
No, not at all.
You say, hello, I'm about to have a nervous breakdown now. Could you please get me the fish?
No, actually, I leave the kitchen and I go to see the ocean. And I come back when I'm calm. So
if I see you by the ocean, I know you're having a small breakdown.
Exactly.
Okay. How many breakdowns have you had?
A few. But they get better.
They get better because you're learning.
Yeah, exactly.
What was the biggest lesson that you learned when you got here?
To take the time to understand the culture. If you take the time, things come along. But it will take much longer than if I was in California or in Europe.
Sure. And then, of course, you had to figure out what you're going to put on the menu.
Exactly. So the first 3 months was a lot of travel and tasting and going to Bangkok street food.
Yeah, this is not going to be creme brulee time. This is this is something completely different.
Exactly.
And you learned the word spicy, more spicy, and unbelievably spicy.
Exactly. I used to know the 911, but I think 911 is nothing compared than Thai spicy.
And how hot do you like it now?
Medium Thai style.
But based on what it was before, that's pretty hot.
Oh, yeah, very.
So, but a place like this has gotten so much publicity lately from all around the world that you have a pretty global clientele.
Yes, exactly.
Right? I met somebody here today from Poland. I met somebody today from London. I met somebody today. Obviously, I'm from the United States. Everybody has a different taste, but they're coming here to experience Thai food. So what do you serve them?
It was the first challenge to make sure the guests understand that they're coming to Thailand to eat Thai food. Before, back in US, you can find Thai restaurant with the flavor, but not 100%. Here you are in the garden of Thailand, so you have to make sure you represent what is Thailand about.
And give me an idea of what you've put on the menu here that's made a difference for you.
I would say the Panang Nua is a curry, red curry extremely spicy, and as we make it everything homemade, we're able to adjust the spiciness. But the guests, when they taste the real one, they don't want to give it up, even if they cry, even if they sweat.
They don't even want to admit it.
Exactly.
Right? They just sit there and go, it's great.
It's good. We offer them milk and cucumber, and they don't want it. They just take the pain.
But the other cool thing about it is you can source things here that you couldn't source in California.
That's for sure. The local fruit and vegetables, nowhere else you can find it. Even in Bangkok, it's very difficult to find.
I mean, first of all, there's the lychee nut, which we all know about, right, mm-hmm. which is delicious. But then I saw with you yesterday, there are like three or four different kinds.
Yeah, longan, longkong, very similar taste, but different look. If we find this in Europe, example market, maybe we'll not buy it because we don't know what it is.
And the other cool thing is I can actually go in the kitchen with you and learn.
Exactly. You can come anytime. The door is open.
But like, I mean, but anybody can.
Exactly. Right. All the guests are invited, and when we do the cooking class, are in the main kitchen, so it's nothing to hide. Everything is there.
Right. And, of course, the one little thing with the arrow pointing to the red thing is saying, not too many.
Exactly. Don't touch it.
Don't touch it. Don't even go near it. Step away from the chili.
Yeah.
Because you'll get nailed.
Exactly.
But you know what? The flavors are so plentiful anyway. You don't need that much stuff.
Even with the spiciness, you can feel the flavor. So
this segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by...
It was really great to see you again.
Travel
nice
Guard
to see
Insurance.
You've landed
for
on
travel
your feet here.
Insurance
here. What a tough
for
assignment
the
you have right here.
See your
at
travel agent.
Thanks
or
for
visit travelguard.com.
A lot of your emails, and some of you are
insurance
angry.
Protection from
we'll
Travel
see
Guard.
When we come back to
now
Pule
back
Bay.
To Peter Greenberg. Call now
Welcome
to talk
back
to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com.
88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. So let's get to some of those emails. Here's one from Nick in Chicago. We are healthy senior citizens of 69 and 70 years old, needing no special diets or special help when traveling. When the airlines ask if one is a senior, is it to one's advantage or disadvantage to say yes? Are we required to share that information? Well, you know what? Anytime you can get a discount by saying you're a senior, tell them that. Anytime you get pre-boarding by saying you're a senior, tell them that. Anytime you get any kind of better service, I'm not asking you to like lie about your age. In fact, be proud about it. Now, if you don't feel like telling anybody that, for example, if you want to go skydiving and they tell you the limit's 65 years of age, well, then it's up to you if you want to lie or not. But bottom line is, there used to be a time when we actually respected people who were seniors, and it doesn't hurt to try to at least let people know that you are. And congratulations for still traveling as much as you do. Here's one from Alan in Milwaukee. I would love to travel to many locations throughout the world, but I have made my travel world small because I'm a fearful flyer. Ever since getting out of the military in the mid-1980s, I have restricted my getting on a plane to basically never. If I can't drive there, I don't go. So my question to you is this. Although I have looked up flights on Fair Compare as one of your suggested sites, I also look at flight details to see what kind of aircraft the carrier will be flying. Is there a site I can go to search by aircraft type to cut down on pulling up all the types of flights and then checking the aircraft type? Well, Alan, why are you checking the aircraft type when you're going to get in your car and drive anyway? What's the point? The point is this, Alan. Do you realize that for the last 10 years, did you hear me? Since 2001, we've just passed the most remarkable period of air safety in our country's history, in the history of flying. We've only had one major commercial airline fatality since 2001. Two, if you count the Colgan air crash near Buffalo. We're talking about the American Airlines A300 crash on November 11th, 2001 in New York City. That's it. Now, I don't know about you, but those are statistics we can't necessarily improve on, but if we maintain them, that beats driving any day of the week. So if you're worried about the kind of aircraft, I wouldn't. I mean, we're getting newer fleets all the time. And not only that, I worry more about pilot training than the kind of aircraft. I want a pilot who can fly the plane and not just monitor systems. So the bottom line is, if you look at the aircraft type, look, the OAG will tell you the aircraft type, the official airline guide. They're also online, OAG.com. You can always see if whether it's a 767 or an Airbus 320 or an MD-80 or a 73. But what is that going to tell you that you don't already know? What you do know is it's still the safest form of transportation, and getting to the airport is going to kill you. So I don't know what else to tell you, but what I will tell you is it's time to make your world a little bigger. Get off your butt. Get on the plane. Here's one from Carolyn in Grants Pass, Oregon. My husband and I want to attend a wedding in Punta Cana in February at the Dreams Palm Beach Resort. However, we know nothing about traveling outside the 50 states. Cost is important, which is why we are saving now for the trip. The wedding party has advised us to use the bride's recommended travel agent. Would you expect that she could get us the best flight rate? Not necessarily, but she might get you the best hotel room because they probably block booked the rooms in Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic. Here's the best way to do it. You're not going till February, right? You're going in about a month and a half. Go online and price the tickets and then ask the travel agent what they're going to charge you for, and you'll have your answer. Very simple. And then do what I do. Forget going online. Call the airline directly and have a conversation with the airline. We've lost the art of conversation. And the biggest myth out there, and even George Hoboka would tell you this from airfarewatchdog.com, is that all the inventory is on the web. It's not. The only inventory that's on the web is the inventory that the airline, the hotel, the cruise line makes available to the web. And so having that conversation costs you nothing, and you might learn about a flight or a time of day to take a flight that the web will never tell you. Remember, the internet does not think creatively. It only thinks linearly. And anytime you have an opportunity and a little bit of benefit of time, as you do now because you're not going till February, to pick up that phone and have that conversation, I encourage you to do so. And then you can do the same thing with the hotel. Maybe they don't have the best rooms at the hotel. Maybe they don't have the best rates at the hotel. Maybe they booked so far in advance they got blocked in and booked in at a much higher rate. Doesn't hurt for you to call the hotel directly. Don't ask to speak to reservations. You'll be rerouted to an 800 number that won't help you. Ask to speak to the MOD, the manager on duty, or the director of sales. Don't tell them you're coming to the wedding. Just tell them you're coming for that weekend and see what happens. All right, there you have it, Carolyn. Good luck, and let me know what happens. I'd love to find out what happened when you finally went to Punta Cana and what rate you did get. When we come back, more from the island of Krabi and Pule Bay, a Ritz-Carlton hotel right in the middle of one of the most beautiful spots in the world. Back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
52 minutes after the hour, coming to you from Pule Bay in the island of Krabi in Thailand. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. You know, when it comes time to talking to the locals, I love talking to local expats because they all have an interesting story. You can always basically start by saying, how did you get here? What made you stay here? And why are you still here? And they all have a different story. Of course, it all happens when it comes to Thailand to do with the fact that once they got here, they just couldn't leave. They figured out any excuse they could possibly use to stay. And, and then add to that, if you really want to know what's going on anywhere in the world, ask a hairdresser. They know all the gossip. They know everything. So who better to talk about that than, how about this for globalization? A French-Armenian hairdresser here on the island of Krabi named Cyril Onassian. Did I do that okay?
Yeah, perfect.
Good.
And you have the French accent as well, but not the Armenian one.
Oh, give me the Armenian one.
No, I'm just joking. I don't even know the Armenian accent for the name. But
I gotcha.
Okay.
So what brought you here?
Well, I came in vacation.
See, they all start with a vacation, then
That's
they
it.
Stay. Yeah.
Yes, and then... Well, after 1 month of having fun in a beautiful place like Thailand, I just fell in love with the country. And then following that, there was also a woman that I fell in love with.
I see. If you ask the woman, it's always a man. With a man, it's always a woman. And that sometimes with a man, it's always a man. Either way, you got it. There's a significant other running around.
You got it. Yeah, but, the woman, I'm still with her, and it's been 12 years, and it's been fantastic. So
the authorities haven't found out yet?
That's right.
Okay, just checking.
So it's good, it's safe.
Yeah, okay. So what keeps you, other than the fact that you're with a woman for 12 years, what keeps you here in Krabi?
Well, I would say it's such a beautiful country with people are just so friendly, so welcoming, so respectful. I'm enjoying it. The nature is fantastic. Everything is good about Thailand.
Okay, so here's my Ask the Locals question to you. When you're not working, where do you hang out that's not in the brochure? Where do you go that's not in the guidebooks?
Well, that's a good question.
I'm glad you appreciate that.
You know why? Because, most of the time I try to avoid the busy places, okay? So I found out about some places, some islands where you can go.
And like?
Well, I would say recently I did some work, since I'm also selling swimming pools, fiberglass swimming pools. You know, I have to go to the island, bring the swimming pool on a boat, and I went on that beautiful island, and there's nobody on this island, just few homes and a few bungalows. Kopu, it's called Kopu, P-U.
Yeah.
Poo, so
Poo Ko means island.
That's right. So that's the island of Poo.
So we're on Poo. Ko. Well, let's not go that far.
Yeah.
But we're in Ko Krabi right now. And you talk about Ko Poo.
Well, Krabi is the mainland. So,
I know that, yes.
Yeah. So you go to Ko Poo about an hour and a half from here with a long tailboat if you want to. But it's very beautiful. I mean, there's so many. Krabi is actually 150 islands. So you have a lot to choose from.
I mean, from this particular place in Pule Bay, you look out the window. Anywhere you look at, you're looking at islands.
Islands. And yeah, and you take a long-tail boat and you go with those fantastic people.
Now, let's talk about the long-tail boat so people understand what we're talking about. We're talking about a long boat with an old truck engine with a drive shaft that's extra long, like at least 20 feet into the water with the propeller sticking down in the water, and they're noisier than you can imagine.
Yes.
But it's the way to go.
Yes, that's the way to go. I wish I would have silencers on those boats, but no, I guess they like it with the noise, so when they go and they take you there as quick as they can, and it's great. Anyway, you see the islands.
So you get out, if you go to any longboat guy and take me to Ko Poo, they'll take you.
Yeah, they can do that. But there's so many islands to choose from that doesn't have to be to Ko Poo, but there's very, very many islands. Beautiful.
And then, okay, let's talk about eating. We know we have a great restaurant here at the hotel, but if you're not eating at the hotel, where do you like to hang out as a restaurant that's not in the guidebook?
While you're telling me this, I'm going to do some great advertisement for maybe one of the best places in Krabi. There's a place which is not even written in English. It's all in Thai. It's one of the popular places in Krabi, and I go there all the time.
And it has a name?
It has a name. It's called Ruan Mai. Okay. So Ruan Mai is my little canteen, I will say. I go there with my family. I get a wife and three kids, and we go there all the time.
And what do you order?
Well, all this, you know, from the paneng pla, which is the paneng with a fish, the chicken paneng also, it's all curry chicken. It's all kind of curries. This food is incredible. And my wife cooks it pretty well as well.
Spicy?
Spicy.
And you're still with her?
I don't prefer spicy.
Ah, see, I knew that. I knew that was coming. Yeah.
Ah, yeah, yeah. The foreigners with a taste of not spicy food. Yeah, it's okay. But...
And so she understands that now.
She does. Yeah.
This is good.
Yeah, it's great. The food is incredible. I have to say.
What was your biggest discovery here that you said I had no idea, and this just like blew you away?
Discovery. Well, I've done so many places. I've never been amazed, but a discovery.
Yeah, something that where you turn the corner and went, oh my goodness. Other than the obvious, like the view or the islands or the people.
Well, I don't know. Everything is incredible about this place. I mean, I feel good. You know, it's all inside yourself. So I came the first time here and I drove the motorcycle and I saw those beautiful mountains. I was between those, limestone mountains.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. The very first time I came to Phuket, I got a motorcycle.
Yes.
And they had one traffic light. That was it. And you just drove around. It was unbelievable.
That's right. Yeah, there's an amazing feeling about this. It absorbs you.
All right. Cyril Onosyan, thank you for joining us. That music means we are out of time for this hour. For those stations leaving us, have a great rest of your weekend. For those stations sticking around and smart enough to do this, we got a whole lot more coming from Phule Bay on the island of Krabi in Thailand. Back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after this.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Around the world, the trip begins with a kiss. Roam if you want to, roam around the world. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard Peter Greenberg Worldwide on this last weekend of the year 2011. Hard to believe we're coming into a new year, and we're coming to you from a new place. We've not broadcast from here before. Get out your maps, boys and girls. 8 degrees, 4 minutes north, 98 degrees, 55 minutes east. We're coming to you from Krabi in Thailand, an amazing place in the southern part of the country, and a place called Phule Bay, which is actually a Ritz-Carlton. And if you, everybody who I've ever brought here doesn't want to leave. In fact, they have to use an industrial strength spatula to get them out to the airport because nobody wants to leave. It is that cool. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. A little bit later on the show, I'm going to give you, because after all, we're coming into a new year, my New Year's wishes, not my New Year's resolutions, my New Year's wishes for what I want to have and travel for next year. And let's see how they mesh up with yours, because I have to tell you, there's a long, long list of them. And I should also tell you in the point of full disclosure that I've been coming to Thailand since 1978, and I have fallen in love with this place from minute one. I have had a chance to go up north, to Chiang Mai, to Chiang Rai, to hang out with the Hill Tribe people on the border of Myanmar. Then it was called Burma. And also thinking about this, when we talk about what I'd like to see happen in the year 2012, you're going to see a lot of travel opening up to places like Myanmar, to places like Cuba. And even by the end of next year, I'll make you predictions that there'll be limited travel to North Korea as well. Travel is the most powerful force of building bridges of peace and understanding. It knocks down barriers. It's an economic force that has to be reckoned with by a number of countries that their only source of income is travel and tourism. I mean, tell me what Egypt produces that the world consumes in volume other than some limited Egyptian cotton. It's called travel and tourism. Tell me what Israel does other than high tech. It's travel and tourism. What does Jordan produce? It's travel and tourism. What does North Korea produce? Absolutely nothing. And they're desperate for travel and tourism. They just don't want to admit it yet because they want to control things. Well, in the world of social media, those days may be numbered for them as well. Opportunities abound. This is going to be the year where barriers get down. And some places that you've never heard of or only limited to in sort of like textbooks when you're growing up or didn't even know where they were are suddenly the hottest places. Montenegro, Estonia, Slovenia. Very cool places. There's even going to be a time later this year where, don't laugh at me, Albania is going to be a cool place to go. Take a look at the Dalmatian coast and you'll see what I mean. It's just not been developed, right? Look at the Musandam Peninsula. Where, you say, is that? I knew you're saying that. I'm going to tell you where that is. Look at the map. It's Oman. It's basically near the Straits of Hormuz. And if you take a look at where that is, nothing's really been done over the last 50 years, and yet it's such a gorgeous place. You go out on boats and swim with the dolphins, and you go, where? You mark my words, by the end of this year, you'll see stories in Condé Nast Traveler and Travel and Leisure where they're saying, here's the new hot place. Well, guess what? I said it first. Check it out, and you'll go. And it's not just to be first on your block. It's because you want to see a place before Starbucks gets there. You want to see a place before Kentucky Fried Chicken invades. I remember going to Vietnam in 1993, before America even recognized them again. And whether you were in Ho Chi Minh City, which, of course, everybody still calls Hanoi. No, they still call it Saigon. Or going up north to Hanoi, you could just smell that there was going to be Kentucky Fried Chicken in 2 seconds. And there was. But you go before. You know, it's sort of like B.C. and A.D. Well, you want to go before chicken. You want to go before chicken. I'm sorry. And with all due respect to the Franchise Food Operators of America, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And I just hope that you'll take my word for this and check out these places, which are all right now, with the exception maybe of some stores in Montenegro, they're still BC, before chicken. You'll be thankful that you did. Coming up on the show in a little bit, our good friend and someone who I serve on the board with, the CEO of Operation USA, who has long ties to Thailand, both as a person who's loved this country and also been involved in many relief efforts, not just here, but in Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, and points beyond. We'll be talking about also volunteer vacations and how you can get involved in making a difference in the world. And that's probably the best New Year's resolution you can give for yourself, and that is, how do you create a vacation experience in the year 2012 that's going to allow you to, first of all, immerse yourself in a culture, which you really want to do anyway. And most Americans, I'm sorry to say, their idea of an adventure travel trip is to go to the Hilton in London and order a cheeseburger. That is not an adventure travel trip, with all respect to the Hilton and with all respect to the cheeseburger. You want to immerse yourself in the culture. And then what else do you want to do? Find out ways in which you can give and give back. Because when you do that, you get back so much more. I suggest that you go to our website, petergreenberg.com, for a comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations that are doing all this great work in so many different parts of the world that may not be on the front page anymore, but they're on our front page. The rebuilding effort in Haiti is going to take at least another 8 years. And let's not kid ourselves. The relief efforts in Japan, even though they're a more developed country and they've got a better economic base, and even though they're moving faster, it's going to take a while. Now, what's the most interesting aspect of all this? What's the first area of business that rebounds faster than anything? Travel and tourism. So why wouldn't you want to be a part of that wave? The time to get in is, again, before chicken. Sorry, I just keep going back to that. The other thing you want to do is, if you've got kids over the age of 8, figure out how to get them involved. And in many cases, there's so many different ways to do it. First of all, most of these organizations have programs that allow you to do it. Second of all, work with your own school district, your own school system, and see if your kid can get an extra credit assignment to go do this. Or bring something, make it a school trip. How about that? Okay, I know everyone wants to go to the nation's capital and tour the FBI building. We all did that when we were in junior high school. No. You know what? Do a volunteer vacation. Make it a class project. The best thing you could possibly do for yourselves. Not only for your kids, but for yourselves. I mean, think what you're accomplishing. Remember, I never let school interfere with my education. So, with all due respect to Mark Twain, who said that, that's what a volunteer vacation is. It doesn't allow you to get anything in the way. You're learning on the ground, and you're learning very, very quickly. So we're going to be talking about that with Richard Walden coming up. And later in the show, of course, my New Year's wishes of what I'd like to see happen in the world of travel in 2012. And by the way, every single one of my wishes, I'm telling you this without a single doubt, is doable. The question is, do we have intelligent people to hear me and to make it happen? Because it's not only intelligence, it's not only commonsensical, it will actually save money. So it's not a question of what it costs. As I like to say, it's really a question of what it's worth. And when you hear these ideas, you're going to go, oh yeah, I get that. It's a no-brainer. Of course, when you're dealing in the travel industry, the word no-brainer presumes, well, that there are brains. So that's one of my wishes for the year 2012, that we have more brains in the travel industry. Because you know what? It starts at the government and works its way down. When we come back, Richard Walden from Operation USA will be back with more of Phule Bay on Krabi in Thailand with Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
It's 18 minutes after the hour. Peter Greenberg coming to you from Phule Bay. It's a Ritz-Carlton, believe it or not, in Krabi in Thailand. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You can email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. And as I do every week at this time on the show, I encourage you to go to our website, petergreenberg.com, for our comprehensive list of aid and relief organizations doing all that hard and essential work to help so many people all around the world, and then you can actually get involved with it. And one of those organizations listed on my list is run by a good friend of ours and on this show, has been on the show many times before, under usually some trying experiences and some trying moments, I should say. He's the CEO of Operation USA. They've been involved since 1979. They've worked in 99 countries, delivering over $300 million in relief and development projects. And his name, Richard Walden. Hey, Richard.
Hi, Peter.
Now, you and I have been coming to Thailand for over, well, we don't want to say how many years, but let's say since 1978. Does that work?
79 for me, 78 for you.
Okay. And, you know, you guys were the first guys on the ground removing landmines, after the war in Vietnam.
We were the first American aid agency to be licensed by the U.S. government to go back to Vietnam and Cambodia after the war. It took 4 years for anybody to get a license, and we flew in cargo planes full of medical aid and other types of things, paid for by Julie Andrews and Blake Edwards. So Hollywood had an early hand in this, and it was decades before the current thing that you see going on with Kim Kardashian in Haiti last week. But we were going in with a lot of widespread support from the entertainment industry.
Kim Kardashian in Haiti is not a rebuilding effort. It's a rebroading effort. Oh, sorry.
Rebranding. But actually, that's a good thing. We encourage people, like you're encouraging your listeners, to go to places that really actually do need help, because they come back and it's unlike any vacation they've ever had.
Well, let's talk about 2004, a relatively recent experience, 7 years ago. The terrible December, right? Just about 7 years ago this month.
I was in Malibu taking a week off, staying near home, Malibu, California. And I had CNN on in my hotel room. And the first broadcast came over, the first notice that there'd been a quake that was in the nines. It was before the tsunami was announced. And I literally checked out of the hotel and drove back to my office, because anything that big was going to produce a nightmarish problem. And it certainly did in Thailand, more so in Indonesia and Sri Lanka. But it was severely impacted. Where we are here was safe, because of so many islands between the sea.
Yes, but very close to here was
very close, an hour's drive from to Khao Lak and Phuket.
And what did Operation USA do at that point?
We wound up flying planes in with some survival gear. We're not first responders, but we come pretty quickly. And then we rebuilt part of an orphanage in Phuket for orphans from the tsunami. And then it was interesting, in Khao Lak, which is much flatter and very heavily frequented by Western Europeans, there was devastation. It was 9:30 in the morning, and it wiped out most of the water sport industry. And in trying to figure out how to rebuild people's lives and incomes, we decided to fund a project that would train people to be certified, PADI certified diving instructors, at the end of which, once they got their certification, we'd buy them about $1,200 worth of equipment, so they didn't have to only work through non-ties, you know, from big hotels or...
So keep it local.
Keep it completely local. And they were able to build their incomes to between $500 and $1,000 a month, which is good income here.
What brought you to Thailand the first time?
It was, we did the first flight to the Vietnamese boat refugees who were then in Malaysia, and a friend of mine said, who had been here during the war, he said, you need to go home through Thailand and see the Lao and Cambodian refugees in Thailand. You've helped the Vietnamese boat refugees. Take a look, because they're just as deserving, and there's a lot of them. So we just took a tour through, and someone from the U.S. Embassy took us north to the border of Laos and east to the border of Cambodia. We said, if we can get a second airplane donated from McDonnell Douglas in those days, now Boeing, we'll come back. 6 weeks later, we were back. And Good Morning America had picked up the first flight in July of 1979 and put us on 4 days in a row, which is unheard of for a show, just because they got interested. We hadn't done a thing. And it was called Operation California. We changed our name in 88 to Operation USA to more adequately reflect how broad-based our support is. And one of the most important things we did was we decided we would not become government contractors. So all of Operation USA's money is private. Our website is www.opusa.org, and it'll give you a history of what we've done in, now it's 100 countries, not 99.
Okay. But you know what the best part about it is? 1997, you guys were the co-recipient of the 1997 Nobel Peace Prize.
It was an odd thing that grew our involvement in the Ban the Mines movement, banning anti-personnel landmines, grew out of my daughter going to a robot camp in Los Angeles one summer that was taught by NASA's chief robotics expert, and she asked me, what do you do? And I told her, and she said, why don't you talk to a bunch of engineers about what you could use from the space program? And I said, I don't know anything about science, but I'll make up something. And I went in to a meeting of 400 engineers, and I listed several things that I thought the space shuttle used. And I said, oh, and by the way, we can't find landmines, no, even knowing what the mines consisted of, but not knowing where they were. And everybody in the room started kind of murmuring. And I said, isn't that an issue for you people here in Los Angeles? These are guys from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. And they said, not really. And I said, well, if I asked this question in Washington, two or three people in the room would think it's a problem that could be solved, but 300 people would say no. And what we did was we started peeling the onion from that. We started going around to science laboratories, national laboratories at Los Alamos and Lawrence Livermore, to NASA, of course, the space program, and asking, what kind of stuff do you guys have that you're not telling the public about, the secret stuff from the black budget, the intelligence gathering? And I started traveling the world. I started going all around the world to science conferences and military conferences.
To come up with the technology to find the mines.
To ask. Yeah. I said, you know, I don't have a security clearance, so I don't need to know the secret sauce, but you need to communicate it to the people doing landmine detection in the Pentagon and elsewhere. And then we added that, our big thing in the anti-mine thing that led to the Nobel Peace Prize was adding a third thing. The first thing was ban the mines. Second thing was help victims of landmines. And the third thing was let's clear the mines. I mean, it's not only a military deal. If the technology is out there, private people can come in. And, of course, right next door to Thailand was Cambodia, which had millions of landmines. There were 65 million mines.
And people
globally
are still getting their legs blown off.
Still today. There's still people going, and they're latent mines, and they've had so many wars over so many years in Cambodia and elsewhere that there's stuff in the ground. You don't know. It'll be pushed up by the weather or the change of topography.
Right, but the interesting thing that you guys also did was that even, well, concurrent with trying to remove the mines, mm-hmm. you were actually delivering prosthetic devices so that people could learn to walk again.
Yes, we were supporting clinics run by other agencies. We keep small at Operation USA. We have a staff of 10. And in order to do that, we make partnerships with agencies in many, many countries. Some are UN and some are local. We prefer local because we're building the capacity of people to take care of themselves. Everybody in my field says we'd like to work our way out of a job. But, you know, the world's getting, in many cases, worse, not better in terms of violence and the after effects of that. Plus, the weather's changing, frankly, and I know you see it. We're here in Thailand where they've had massive flooding in the central part of the country and to the outskirts of Bangkok, which they said, oh, well, it's a monsoon, but it just happens to be worse. I got news for them. I see it all over the world. The weather's changing. There is, you know, you can call it global warming or whatever, but the climate is changing.
So basically, you're here to give me another inconvenient truth.
The inconvenient truth is there's plenty to do, but where we are, it's fine. There's nothing in Krabi in the way of a natural disaster. The flooding didn't affect where we are. It affected the central part of the country.
Well, when we come back, what I want to talk to you about is other parts of the world and where you're also involved, in Haiti.
In Japan, I was there last week.
Exactly. Yeah. So let's talk about that with Richard Walden, the CEO of Operation USA, when we come back to Krabi in Thailand at the Phu Lae Bay Resort, otherwise known as Ritz-Carlton. Back with more. Stick around right after this.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
Back with you at 33 minutes after the hour. Peter Greenberg here with you from the Poulet Bay in Krabi and the Ritz-Carlton, and talking with Richard Walden, the CEO of Operation USA. Just a little side note before we talk about all, it's a bizarre juxtaposition, I'll bring this up, but I usually despise words that end in ST, you know, best, greatest, most, loveliest, because it's just bad brochure language. Richard, you and I have traveled the world together. Would we rate this place one of the best? Can we just talk about the beds in the room?
The bed is bigger than my bedroom at home. It's 14 feet long and 7 feet wide.
And you know what's really bad about that? We're both here on our own.
I won't go there with that.
No, I just have to say it. You get in this bed, you go, hello? Anybody here?
No, this is really, it feels like a billionaire's private club of beautiful villas and an amazing beach, and the staff's amazing. So
I think that the guy who's the architect here, I mean, saw the movie Big. I think he saw the movie Big. I mean, the bed is humongous. The couches are humongous. The chaise lounge, I can't even describe the feeling that you have when you sit in one of these things.
Yeah, and this is actually for all the travel I've done in Thailand, it's my first time in Krabi. I've been in Phuket and places nearby, but I had not been here before. And gradually my friends in Bangkok would mention that they were going to Krabi for the weekend. And I said, where's that? Is this a new, you know, because every area is the great new thing. And I've watched it for 32 years. But this place is really exceptionally beautiful.
You flew down here basically 6 hours before I got down here. And before I even got on the plane, you sent me an email that started with OMG. So we'll just leave that alone right there. Hey, let's get serious for a second, because we were talking about Vietnam and Laos and Cambodia. Yeah. Let's talk about Haiti and Japan. I mean, I said it earlier in the show, those rebuilding efforts are happening now. They need all the help they can get.
Yeah, I was on a very interesting delegation led by the mayor of Los Angeles, their fire department people, their emergency officials, and some business people. And we went to Sendai, which was near the epicenter of the quake that hit Japan on March 11th. And it was quite remarkable how quickly the Japanese recycled the rubble, unlike in Haiti. Of course, they had more money, but they did it quickly. They rebuilt the infrastructure. There's travel and tourism coming back online. Yeah. But there's still, you know, people in Tokyo will not eat anything grown in that region or fished out of the sea for fear of radiation. And, you know, personally, I think it's overblown, except for the first 12 to 15 miles from the reactor. But this whole province and the next two prefectures north of there, they're not selling their food. And they're some of the most high production, intensively produced agriculture in the world. These farms have been in families for 500 years. It's quite remarkable. And there's nowhere to go in Japan. You know, you're not going to go buy 50 acres somewhere else. Anything.
I mean, land is a premium.
You can't
of course.
Yeah. And so the challenge is to get about 100,000 people resettled and back into the economy. One fellow who owns one of the largest cell phone companies has decided to put $100 million of his own money into solar arrays on farmland. In other words, the nuclear plants are closed down for good. There's six of them in the Fukushima area north of Tokyo. So he's telling the farmers, I'll help you buy, I'll buy for you, and you can pay me back later. Solar panels. Just fill your farmland with solar panels and sell the energy at a contract price. So we'll see if that works. But the other parts from the Kobe quake years before,
sure,
they didn't do well with the people, with the elderly and with guest workers, a lot of foreign workers in Japan, and weren't treated particularly well. So we're focused on what is it we can do for those people with a modest amount of money.
And travel and tourism is slowly coming back. And a lot of cruise ships are now making an intentional port call in some of those areas to let people know that they care.
Yeah, I mean, that will do it. But the thing is, Japan took a hit the way Thailand takes a hit. If something goes wrong somewhere, people don't differentiate of where is it, where in the country is it, and they'll just not come.
So, well, so it happened last year when they had some rioting in Bangkok. It was only over about a 4-square-block area. I know that area very, very well. And most of my friends said, oh, I'm not going to Bangkok. It's on fire. And I said, guys, I'm going to use an industrial strength spatula. I'm going to grab you out. I'm going to put you on a plane. You're going to go there. And then you're going to call me and tell me how bad a time you're having. And, of course, they had the greatest time. Because it was only – same thing in Athens. You know, you see the rioting in Athens. It's all in front of the Grand Britannia Hotel over a 4-square-block area in downtown Athens. That's it.
Well, there were people like the fellow who emailed you who doesn't like flying.
Yeah.
You know, if they see one thing even in the region, it maybe doesn't even have to be in Thailand, they'll go somewhere else. So,
well, the most important thing is Richard Walden goes everywhere else. The website, again, is –
www.opusa.org.
You do great, great work, and your trips are amazing. Get involved, as I have gotten involved. It will be a life-changing experience and not your typical vacation, I promise you. Richard, thanks for joining us. And I think you'll come back a little bit later in the show and talk about some of the other work that you're doing elsewhere in the world. That music means we're going to take a quick break here from Poulet Bay in Krabi and back with more Peter Greenberg Worldwide. With a little tip on, we told you about how great this place is. Well, it's also quite romantic. Want to hear the quite romantic? We're going to talk about weddings. Back right after this.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg coming to you from Poulet Bay, a Ritz-Carlton resort right here in Krabi in Thailand. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. You know, earlier in the show, talk about globalization, we had a French-Armenian hairdresser here. And now, of course, moving around, we'll get a little Scandinavian approach. Now we're going to have a Norwegian wedding planner. I love it. And her name? Ann Lisa, how are you?
Good.
And I love that accent. I love it. From Oslo, right?
Yes.
I know. Okay, I have to ask the question, how did you get here?
It's actually a very funny story. I was working in Copenhagen, Denmark, as a restaurant manager. And then my boss now, Ingeborg, she come to the restaurant and she tell me, your Danish is very poor. You have to be from Oslo. And then I said, yes. And then she said, I'm also from Oslo. And then she offered me a work after 5 minutes. And then we started chatting a little bit.
And next thing you know, you're in Thailand.
Yeah, 3 months later, after meeting her, I was here.
And what did you know about Thailand? Anything?
I had been here on holiday.
Once?
Yeah, once for 3 weeks, but it's very different to be here on holiday and to working here. And it was not this area. It was Koh Samui.
We're in the world of destination weddings now.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to do destination weddings.
Yes.
I have a certain I love destination weddings with one caveat. Want to hear my big problem?
Yeah.
Whether it's a destination wedding, whether it's in the United States or anywhere else in the world, I think it's cruel and unusual punishment to have it over a holiday weekend. I think July 4th, Memorial Day, Labor Day, it's cruel and unusual punishment on your guests because they have to go for the whole weekend. And yet, if they would have it here in Thailand, I would make the exception of that rule and figure out a way to come, right?
Yeah.
What's different about a wedding that you do here? Because you try to do it more traditionally, right?
Yeah, we do Western kind of weddings here. The Thai kind of weddings here is very, they do too much color. And everything is too much.
So it's like an Indian wedding.
Yeah.
It like goes on for days.
Yeah, it goes on for days. The makeup takes 5 hours, et cetera, et cetera.
So the makeup takes 5 hours?
Yeah, for Thai weddings, yeah.
Wow.
So we go more the Western style. Make it more simple, elegant, clear.
Right. Sign the prenup, get married, you're divorced. Done.
Not the divorce part, I hope. Not the divorce part, I hope. Yeah.
Okay, so but basically you can do it. I mean, look, the room that I'm in right now, you could get married in that room.
Yes.
I mean, these villas here are unreal. And people do.
Yeah.
What's the most unusual wedding you've done here?
The most...
Or the most elaborate?
I think it was for Australian couples. There were 90 people, and we had to take them to the island. And in Thailand, you have very...
One of the, which island?
Tub Island.
Okay.
It's about 20 minutes from Ritz-Carlton. And we had to take them...
By boat?
By boat. And we had 4 speedboats to take them out. And then suddenly it started to rain a lot and wind a lot and have waves, so we cannot go to the island. In whole day it was sun, and in 1 hour everything changes.
So what happened?
No, we had to go to the hotel. So I had to call...
Oh, you had to slum it here?
No. I called another hotel and I said, we're coming in 1 hour with 90 people for a wedding.
And they put it together?
Yes.
See, that's the cool thing about the Thais. They adjust so quickly and they just make it happen.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's also why I like to live here, because they are like everything we can fix. They not start to cry, or they just say, oh, relax, relax.
Listen, my favorite saying in Thai is what? Mepen Rai.
Yeah, Mepen Rai. Yes.
And what does that mean?
Don't worry about it.
It's going to be fine. Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
But when... What are the rules about getting married here? I mean, if I wanted to get married here, well, first of all, they'd have to hire paramedics to treat people for shock. But if I did want to get married here,
yeah.
Right, I mean, what kind of rules do I have to follow about getting a license, is it a real marriage?
Yeah, you can get the real marriage also. But usually, most of the people, they choose to get legally wed home first.
So this is more ceremonial.
Yeah, but you can also do the legal part in Thailand, but it takes a long time, and it costs a lot of money also.
I've had people who've gotten married on elephants here.
Yeah, you can do that also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Not bad.
5 hours of makeup just for the elephants. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
What's the website?
www.wedding/in/thailand.com.
That's easy.
Yeah.
And you know something? I can't think of anything more romantic than to do it right here. Amazing stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people actually might stay married if they do this.
Yes.
Unbelievable. And Lisa, thanks for coming. And by the way, I should tell everybody that she found her love here. She's married here with 2 kids.
One.
One. But how old are you?
I'm 26.
Oh, you child, you. We'll be back with more from Poulet Bay in Krabi right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg coming to you from Poulet Bay on Krabi in Thailand, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And of course, if you can't get through on the phones by this time, you have to know the drill. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem, and we'll solve it right here on the air. As I promised you, or actually warned you early in the show, it's now time for my New Year's resolutions for the year 2012. Things I would like to resolve that will actually maybe even happen in the world of travel. They're based on just basic common sense and intelligence, 2 things that I also wish for the travel industry, which you don't find very often. So let's start with this one. And it's a no-brainer. I want to see in the year 2012 pre-clearance. Does anybody even know what that is? Well, you know about what it is if you're flying out of Ireland, if you're flying out of the Bahamas, Bermuda, if you're flying out of Canada. You clear U.S. customs in those countries, and by the time you get to the United States, your bags aren't lost. You're not a wreck. You're not standing in the world's longest line. You can either go home or connect to your flight with no delay. It's a no-brainer. They want you out to those countries anywhere 2 hours ahead of the flight. Plenty of time to put on the manifest that are needed for the security people. Plenty of time to do all the actual paperwork that's needed and to get you cleared through customs. Now, why is this such a good idea? No, it's not going to cost money. It's going to save money. No more misconnected flights. No more misconnected passengers. No more misconnected bags. It's a no-brainer. And here we are in the year about to happen, 2012, and we're still operating as if either the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria were operating, or it's the Titanic about to hit an iceberg. Let's get going here, guys. That's number one. Number two, this is an easy one, guys. Here it comes. I want baggage carts at gates, not at the beginning of the terminal. also at gates. Based on what we're seeing and what we're experiencing, and this happens to me as well, we all travel with at least two carry-on bags, and we're schlepping 8 miles. I don't mind even paying for the carts. Just put them at the gates. Why is it that every time you want to use a cart, they tell you you can only go this far with the cart, and they take it away from you? What draconian idiot woke up thinking this was a great idea? Seriously. You know, every airport that you get to get the carts, you go 80 feet, that's it, that's all you can do. Sorry, that is not sensible, and it just makes for a very bad travel experience. That's number two. Number three, this is a hotel one, and I have to tell you that, for me, it's insulting. Why would you spend, $600 a night for a hotel room? That's okay, I understand that. But why would you spend $600 a night for any room and then be charged $25 extra for a resort fee? What is that? That's insulting. That is basically saying to you, we're just going to rip you out. It's like acting like the airlines. We're going to charge you for everything we possibly can. This should be the year. 2012 should be the year of the all-inclusive without the asterisk. The all-inclusive that truly means this is what you're going to pay for, and that includes everything. I was at a resort in Cancun called Le Blanc. I was only down there for a meeting. I wasn't there to vacation. But what did I see down there? It was unbelievable. Everything in your bill was included. Let me tell you what was included. Yes, your room. Yes, your meals. All your alcoholic beverages. Everything you wanted to eat. Your mini bar. Your long-distance telephone charges. Everything. You could make calls 24 hours a day from your room. It was still included. All of your water sports, even your motorized water sports, all included. Now, they were getting about $475 a night for the room, and nobody blinked. You know why? Because nobody was going to their wallet every 5 minutes. And people were thrilled to be there. And by the way, their occupancy, 100%. People said, this is where I want to stay, where nobody's going to beat me up. And the other idea, here's what happens when everything's all included. And people don't want to admit this, but it's true. Your first day there, you go, wow, I can drink all this? And maybe you have a few extra drinks. The next day you go, I'm not going to drink all that. And your consumption goes down. It all evens out. People actually act more sensibly when it's like that. And when you're coming back to your room after a busy day, either in meetings or you're out at the beach, and you can actually visualize that chocolate chip cookie, or visualize that soft drink, or visualize that piece of fruit, and realize it's not going to cost you anymore because you've already paid for it. You don't have to think about it. You feel so much better about the experience, and you'll come back. How about that, hotel owners? You don't make money when we show up the first time. You make money when we come back. You want us to come back? Stop nickel and diming us. And we should basically have a detector that says, if you see a bottle of water in the credenza and they want to charge you for the bottle of water, open the bottle of water, drink it, refill it with tap water, and put it back with a sign saying, I'm not paying for it. Because we all go shopping. We know what it costs. I can buy 3 cases of water for what they want to charge me for one bottle in a hotel. This is insulting. Or put it as part of the rate. Remember, all-inclusive without the asterisk. And then, last but not least, and I just have to say it, and it's a wish because I see it happen all too often. I think, and some people may disagree with this, we should put breathalyzers at boarding gates. Because too many people are getting drunk at airports because either the plane's late or they're crazy to begin with or they're afraid to fly, whatever it is, and people are boarding the plane tanked. And the last thing I want is some guy going crazy at 35,000 feet because you're at altitude, you have low humidity, it's a disaster recipe waiting to happen. Put breathalyzers at the boarding gates. Oh, by the way, not just for the passengers, let's make the pilots go through them too. Okay, that's it. You got them. Those are my wishes for 2012. And if you don't like them, email me to peter@petergreenberg.com or give me your own ideas. That music means we're out of time for this hour. For those stations leaving us, have a great rest of your weekend. For those stations sticking around, we got a whole lot more coming from Poulet Bay and the Ritz-Carlton in Krabi in Thailand. We'll be back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after this.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Around the world, the trip begins with a guest. Rise. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Hope you're having a wonderful last weekend in 2011, wherever you happen to be. You know where we happen to be? Boy, did we luck out. Get out your maps, boys and girls. 8 degrees, 4 minutes north, 98 degrees, 55 minutes east. We are coming to you from southern Thailand, from Krabi, and at an amazing resort called Phule Bay, which is part of the Ritz-Carlton collection. It's called the Ritz-Carlton Reserve. Ritz-Carlton Reserve. I like that. But an amazing location. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. And those of you who know me know that anytime I get a chance to be out on the water, looking at the water, in the water, I'm there. And in keeping with our theme today of globalization, we had an Armenian French hairdresser, or Norwegian wedding planner, and now we have a German dive master, I think.
Or a Danish scuba dive instructor.
And one of those too. Bottom line is, everybody has a different reason for coming here, but they all usually have the same reason for staying here. And and welcome to the show, Malene Jensen. Malene, everybody who I've talked to said, okay, why did you come here? Well, I first came on vacation, and then there was a woman, or then there was a man. How about you?
Same thing.
Aha! And?
He was German.
Ah, that was the German. I knew there was a German in there somewhere.
True, yeah. It's many years ago now.
All right, but you stayed.
I stayed, yeah.
And did you come down here as a dive master? No.
No. I used to live in Australia. That's where I met him.
Of course you did.
Yeah,
you see that we're in the global
living, yeah,
of course, yeah.
And he explained to me that this place was a very, very good place to start. So I thought I'd give it a try.
So basically, even though you're no longer with him, he was right about one thing.
He was, very much, yeah.
And tell me about the water here, because when I first came to this part of the world, and I'm going back many, many years ago to Phuket, in the east coast of New York, where I live, the Atlantic Ocean, it's about 65, 70 degrees. The water, of course, on the Pacific in California, it's much colder than that. And I go to Phuket, I jump on the water, I went, whoa, what is this? It was like a bathtub. It was so warm.
That's why I'm here. That's one of the big reasons, yeah?
I mean, it takes some getting used to, and I'm not ready. It's warm.
Mm.
What else was special about this?
Well, where I come from, we normally have a tide that goes up every 12th hour, but here it goes up and down every 6 hour, which means a lot for my work that I need to make sure that the charts are right. But it also means that there is a lot of different plankton, and it gives it nutritious water, so there's more for me to see.
And tell me what you get to see down here.
Oh, where can I start?
Because, when people talk, we're going to start, because when we talk about diving around the world, everybody talks about Truk and Palau and Micronesia. They talk about the Great Barrier Reef. Mm. They talk about the Cayman Islands, right? They talk about the Red Sea.
For sure, yeah.
And now?
Well, these places are all places where there's great, great visibility most times, yeah? So you see 30, 40, 50 meters in the water. We don't have that here, but there is many, many different things to see. So the diversity here in around these islands and the Phoebe Islands is just amazing.
So what are you going to see? Tell me.
Well, you can see everything from little interesting nudibranchs, little snails that lives under the water. Yeah, they are hermaphrodites. They can change their sex. They can have mate together. They can breed, so they can live between 1 month to a year. Or you even have the whale shark. So you have everything in between. That's what makes my job really, really cool.
And do you go swimming with whale sharks?
Sometimes, if I'm there and he's there, I'll jump in.
And you're not worried about that?
No. No, they're vegetarians. They're plankton eaters.
Oh, that's a very good thing to know before you jump in. That's it's an exceptionally good thing to know before you jump in.
I know. It's a really, really cool experience.
What's the biggest surprise for you when people come here for the first time that you watch them experience?
Well, for me, in my job, today I had an 11-year-old boy. Yeah, to see him come into the water and just mainly do everything I teach him, and he just swims like a little fish, and he comes up with a Colgate smile from ear to ear, then I know I got a really pretty good job, yeah.
He went fishing?
No. He went diving with me.
Good, okay. Because you still have the rule here, you leave everything on the floor.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What's the biggest mistake that people make when they come here?
Well, people's perception, they think that diving takes a long time, so they rather not want to study too much.
Do people come here to get certified?
They do all the time. But not so much honeymooners, yeah. But They think it takes a long time to get certified. Well, you can try it in just one day. You don't need to study. You just need a little bit of introduction, and then you can jump right in.
And the water, I mean, it's interesting because Richard Walden was talking about it before. We're so protected here by the islands that you're not seeing a lot of rough water.
No. The water here is very, very calm. Like today, we maybe have a little bit of swell, maybe 20 centimeters of waves, yeah. And sometimes it's a little bit more, but it always is extremely calm.
When you take people out, how deep do you go here?
Depends on the certification, but for the first timers.
Are there cave dives here?
There are, yeah.
And night dives?
There is.
Do you do that?
Yes.
You love that, don't you?
Yeah.
That would scare the you-know-what out of me.
No, because some of the fish, they go asleep, yeah, but then you can watch them.
I'm not worried about the fish sleeping. I'm worried about me. What are you talking about?
Well, you have a torch. You can see your way out.
Oh. But in that one, you really better have a buddy down there with you.
Yeah, you always dive with a buddy, and you never dive alone.
Ever?
No.
And especially the night dives.
No, never the
night dives. Without exception.
There should be three people.
What was that?
There should be three people.
Okay, I'll remember that. With me, I'd like an entire armada, please. I want them just to support me down there. When you get down there, what about the wrecks? Are there wrecks?
There are one wreck here. There is a few others, but they're not always diveable. But one wreck is here, yeah.
And what is that wreck?
It is called the King Cruiser wreck. It's a passenger ferry that went down about 12 years ago.
Oh, so it's recent.
Well, yeah, recent.
12 years ago is pretty recent when it comes to wrecks.
Yeah.
And wooden boat?
No, it's a steel.
A steel boat?
Yeah.
And so it went down in a storm or it just hit a rock and went down?
I think it was a little bit on purpose because it hit the only reef that was between Phuket and the PP Islands.
So what you're basically saying, it was an insurance scam.
I didn't say that, but I had an idea about it.
You know, it was interesting because we did a story with the King of Jordan once, and he talked about this boat that started to sink in the Red Sea. And they knew it was an insurance scam because when they got in the lifeboats, they were all wearing their jackets and ties, and they had their suits already packed. They had their suitcases already packed.
Yeah.
They planned for it.
I know. I dived that one as well.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, you did. Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
See, I wasn't telling a story.
No, I know the story. It's a very, very funny one. Yeah.
And then they talk about an insurance scam. They all showed up already dressed to pack. I mean, it's like, hello, not a good idea. The website for you, by the way, is contiki-thailand.com, correct?
Yeah.
And how long would it take you to certify? I've been certified once in the Cayman Islands, but I could use it again. How long would it take to certify?
Well, you can get a basic scuba dive in just 2 days. But everybody takes the full one, open water diver, and that's 4 days.
You want to do it right.
Yeah, you want to learn everything.
All right, so we dump the German, right? Do we dump the German?
We dump the German.
But now?
There was an Englishman.
Passed
away.
Okay, see? Never a dull moment with you. Lillian Johnson, the GM of Contiki, and a dive master. And, of course, the website again, contiki-thailand.com. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide with a visit again with our friend Richard Walden about all the aid and relief work you can do when you're on vacation. Back with more from Pule Bay right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from Phule Bay and Krabi in Thailand. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-887-3837. 88 Peter, and if you can't get through on the phones, email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. If you've been listening to the news over the last month and a half to 2 months, then you know that Thailand was afflicted with some serious flooding. A lot of people displaced. Although that flooding has subsided, a lot of people thinking that they shouldn't be coming to Thailand, when in fact this is the best time to come, when people are the happiest to see you. I'm going to say something that's going to sound perhaps politically incorrect. I don't care. I believe in it. I live it. And that is the best time for anybody to go anywhere, with very few exceptions, is after they've had a civil disturbance, a revolution, the Arab Spring, if you will, or a natural disaster. Because All the other fearful Americans won't go, and the smart travelers will. When the going gets tough, the smart travelers actually travel. And what you see and then what you experience is a destination that is thrilled to see you, happy to see you, affordably available to you, and you're going to have an experience that allows you to immerse yourself in that culture unlike any other opportunity you've had in the past. And that, in a way, sort of like embodies the concept of the volunteer vacation, and that allows you to go somewhere to be with the locals and to give back. If you don't think you've got anything to give back, think again. Whether you're a butcher, a baker, a candlestick maker, an electrician, a plumber, an interior designer, a floral arranger, it doesn't matter. There are things that you can do and things that you should do and can do when you're on vacation. And I'm not saying you have to become the Red Cross. You can bookend it. You can spend half your time at the spa and then go and do stuff. But the point is, you know, you shouldn't go to New Orleans without a visit to the Ninth Ward. You shouldn't, or to St. Bernard's Parish. You shouldn't go to Japan without at least finding out what you can do to help out. We were doing a piece in New Zealand last year and went down to Christchurch just to be able to see what we could do to help out. And the answer is, there's a lot of things you can do. And you know what? The best gift you can give yourself is when you give back to others. And joining me now, the CEO of Operation USA, one of the great relief organizations on the planet. And I say that unabashedly. I've known him for over 30 years. I actually serve proudly on his board. And he's a regular on our show, usually reporting from distant locations all around the world. He's actually in Thailand right here with me at Pule Bay. And that's Richard Walden. Hey, Richard.
Hi, Peter.
Now, you were on earlier in the show talking about, you know, the situations around the world and some of the history of Operation USA in Cambodia, in Laos, in Vietnam, down in Haiti, in Japan. What should people, you know, when they see something in the news, when there's an event, and usually it involves some tragedy, whether it's raging fires or floods or earthquakes or tsunamis or civil disturbances, where people are displaced, when people need help, what's the first thing they can do where they can actually be of some help? Because the first thing that the first responders will tell you, like the Red Cross, is don't show up. Just donate money. Do you agree with that?
No. Money's great. I mean, yeah. It's what makes us able to respond longer. Usually we get donated products and we from American companies and we get donated transportation and we match up what we have with what's needed. We'll do a field visit, or if we trust the agencies in certain countries where we've had a history, we'll let them do the needs assessment and we'll stay home and do our job. But money is very helpful. What people can do, however, in the recovery phase is figure out how to reestablish people's income. And in Sri Lanka, for example, down in Galle, one of the really beautiful places, we gave grants. And we didn't give loans. We didn't make $100 loans because people already lost their houses, their livelihoods, and what have you. We did what are called livelihood grants. And we did 110 different occupations. We interviewed people for weeks. And one guy had a cell phone repair company, a stall at the market. He lost all his supplies. The market was wiped out by the tsunami. So we replaced his supplies. It was about $1,000 worth. Another lady opened a hair salon called the Tsunami Salon. It sounds like a salami salon.
Tsunami salon. I love it.
And again, it was in Galle, Sri Lanka. We thought we were being very useful. What was really interesting was that several of the hotel people in Galle, fearing that travel and tourism were not going to come back that quickly because there was so much damage, they set up their own relief agency called Galle 2000. And they went and, you know, they contacted some of the travelers who had been there musing about how beautiful Sri Lanka was. And they mobilized people. They mobilized guests who were currently there. And
you see, that's the whole idea of immersing the guests in the process. The Ritz-Carlton, for example, in New Orleans and a number of other locations have something called a give-back getaway, where you stay, and if you agree to stay an extra day, they'll give you the room for free if you go out and work in the community, and people just can't get enough of it. They love it. It's a concept that's not initially something that they embrace, and then all of a sudden they get their arms around it and they do it.
You and I did a trip. How many years ago was it to Vietnam?
93.
So 18 years ago. And I thought the high point of the trip was taking these folks, all of whom could afford just about anything, to rural Vietnam, a couple hours north.
And we should say that the reason why we did the trip was to raise money for Operation USA.
We did. Yeah. But we took them. But the high point for them, I think, was not shopping in Bangkok or Hong Kong. It was literally going to an agricultural project in a rural area of Vietnam and listening to a Vietnamese doctor tell them what it was like during the war, what it was like at that point in time, and seeing how they, you know, make a small contribution could really make a huge difference, which is what Operation USA tries to promote.
If people are listening to the show and trying to figure out, okay, where can I go? Where can I be the most help, where the people have the most need right now, as we enter 2012, what would be your target destinations?
Haiti with qualifications. The qualification would be it's hard to deploy you unless you're a doctor, a nurse, or a teacher. All of those are needed, and there's a minimal amount of bureaucracy in terms of getting approved, but you do need to link up with a local school or a relief group. Sometimes the hotel can do it for you, and the clever hotel people are the ones who really reach out to their own communities so that if somebody asks them that question,
right,
they can immediately put them in. But Haiti is tough.
Yeah.
Sri Lanka is another place that still needs help. They just came out of a civil war that was particularly bloody. They had the tsunami hit them. It wiped out their fishing fleet. I say Sri Lanka now because it's relatively safe and it's relatively easy. So usually what happens is a kid will be graduating college and saying, I don't know what to do right now. I'm going to go to grad school, but I thought I'd take a year off. And I'm saying, I know you're probably $100,000 in debt from college, but if you could swing a few months on your own, go out to a place like Sri Lanka and walk in as a volunteer with your newly minted degree to one of the major relief agencies working there. And if you prove yourself, they may pick you up as a paid employee.
Not a bad way to go.
Not a bad way. And then you're in the field forever because there'll be an unlimited amount of positions.
But not just about people looking for jobs. I'm talking about people listening to the show who want to go on vacation somewhere and then still at the same time be of help.
Exactly. Well, so you're not – one-day volunteers sometimes are very tough, which is why it's important that some of the hotels and other people in the travel industry think through how they would deploy a one-day volunteer. But it's very interesting, like your friends. Yeah, that one day proved to be enough because several of them have maintained a relationship with Operation USA over all these years because they know what we do now.
Yeah.
They've seen it.
So they came back, and they become proselytizers for you guys in terms of letting people know how other people can get involved.
Yeah, exactly.
The website again?
www.opusa.org, Operation USA.
And, you know, recently on the show we had Jan Gesing, who's the general manager of the Oriental in Bangkok. During all the flooding, even though the Oriental didn't get nailed, so many of his own employees did and lost their houses and stuff, and the guests got involved in helping them as well.
They did. They were the Oriental put up 300 of its own employees whose houses were or the traffic would not allow them to get to work, but they also helped them. And there are stories all along this coast where we are outside Krabi. We're not far from Phuket and Khao Lak, and the hotel and tourism industry suffered a huge blow, but they recovered in a year and a half.
Exactly, and that's the thing about travel and tourism. It is the most resilient when it comes back to recovery. Richard Walden from Operation USA. You can find more about Richard and the operation and the website by going to our website at petergreenberg.com. Thanks very much, everybody. Richard, thank you. When we come back, your emails and some surprises.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg coming to you from Phule Bay in Krabi in Thailand, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. We got lots of emails to get through today, so let's get to one right here from Craig in Miami. With today's global world, as opposed to any other day when there was no global world, I like the way you wrote that, Craig, do travelers even need to get shots to visit countries such as India? Well, I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on TV. The answer is consult your physician. I'm not getting out of this that way because I just want to get out of it. It's because that's the proper advice I can give you. Your doctor knows your own medical history, and they can always consult with the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta. That'll give you an idea of what's really required in the destinations that you're traveling. Now, there are some people who'd go to India that will tell you to get malaria shots. Now, for me, or take malaria pills, I should say, and that is not something I've ever done because in my experience, I've seen people react so negatively to the pills. The side effects from that, I've seen people medevaced out. It all depends on what your own doctor tells you. The one thing I will tell you to do, you mentioned shots, and that is have your doctor pack for you, and if he's a good doctor or if she's a good doctor, they'll do it, an emergency medical kit. And we're not talking about just bandages and some antiseptic wipes. I'm talking about different medications for any conceivable eventuality that you might come up against. You know, two or three pills per in a little plastic box, a little plastic bag with an identifier as to what it is and what it does and what it should never be done for. I will tell you this. I've had one packed for me. We've had him on the show, Norm Esten, who's a wonderful emergency medical doctor. We're based out in Maui, who was actually our doctor for the Olympics when I was at NBC. Norm put all these little medications in a little Altoids box, which I still carry with me. And for 4 years, I never even opened the box, never had to. Until one day, about a year and a half ago, I was in such pain in the middle of nowhere and didn't have any medical assistance nearby. And I opened the box and took out a Vicodin. And why? Kidney stones. Wow. And thank God that I had that because it got me to my next destination where I went to the emergency room and they took care of me. That is important stuff. Now, if you're going to pack that box with you when you travel, make sure that you have a letter from your doctor explaining what it is and why they gave you a prescription for it so that no overzealous customs guy wants to make an example of you as some sort of a drug smuggler, which, of course, you're not. Here's an email from Becky in one of my favorite cities, Madison, Wisconsin. Living in Wisconsin encourages me to travel to warmth more often. It's still one of my favorite cities. And she says, as you well know from past experience, correct? Yes. I now have 48,000 frequent flyer miles, and once I hit the 2 free tickets, we'll change card carriers I want to redeem. I want to go to Italy. What is the best way to utilize the tickets, or should I use now? Forget about the 2 freebies. Okay, first of all, if you think you're going to get to Italy on 50,000 miles, meaning 2 25,000-mile tickets, you may need some medication as well. Bottom line is you can't. Remember, you were induced to join the frequent flyer program with the idea that once you got to 25,000 miles, you'd get a free domestic coach ticket, which even now is almost impossible to get because the airlines play a bait-and-switch game of telling you that they don't have any available at 25, but they've got them at 50. So my advice to you is use those tickets for domestic flights or buy a relatively inexpensive international flight and use your mileage to upgrade. And that's how you do it. Now, you also said, my friend said that you had a unique way to get the tickets without the airlines playing their usual cruel games. Well, the answer is I do. And here's how you do it. Let's say you want to go from, Madison, Wisconsin to Honolulu, okay? And you call the airline and say, I've got my mileage. I'd like to redeem my miles. And they go, no seats available. Or they'll tell you that they have seats available, but not for the mileage level you thought you could redeem it for. So are you out of luck? No, you're not. Not necessarily. I mean, if you're going on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving or the Friday before Super Bowl, maybe. But any other time of the year, not usually a bad idea to do what I'm going to tell you to do. Pick the flight you want to take. Let's say it's the very first flight of the day, which, by the way, it should be, from Madison to Honolulu. And say, okay, you have no seats available on, let's say you want to go in January. And they say no seats available. Okay, say when in my lifetime will you have seats available at this mileage level between Madison and Honolulu? And they'll say, well, we have it in October. like, you know, on Halloween or whatever it is. And you go, great, I'll take it. Now, you don't want to go on Halloween. You want to go in January, but take the ticket. So now you have a ticket that reads Madison to Honolulu in October. Remember, you want to go in January. Madison to Honolulu in October, coming back with an arbitrary return date a week later. Now you have a ticket with the cities you want to go to and from, on the flight you want, just not on the dates you want. Now you hang up the phone, you've got your ticket, you've redeemed your miles, you pick up the phone again and you call the airline and you say, great, I'd like to go to Honolulu from Madison in January, and you want to buy a ticket. And they'll say, okay, how many are traveling? And you say some stupid number like six. If they come back to you with a three-word question like, and the names, you know they've got at least six seats available in that flight. Now, you're not going to book the tickets because you can't. They expire in 24 hours anyway. You have to pay for them or the reservation, you know, just goes away. But at least you know there are at least six seats available. And you keep calling back every day up until the time you want to fly. Now, I'm presuming you have a place to stay. You ship your bags ahead of time 3 or 4 days in advance. You show up at the airport at 5 o'clock in the morning on the day you want to fly. 9 times out of 10, you'll get on that flight. If you don't get on that flight, you're number one for standby on the next flight. I got more emails to read when we come back from Phule Bay in Krabi, Thailand. So stay tuned. We got more.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you on this last weekend before New Year's. Hard to believe it's gone so far so fast. But it is, and coming to you from one of the most beautiful resorts I've ever been to, Phule Bay on Krabi in Thailand, and taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. We've been reading emails, so let's keep going. We got one from Luke who says, I booked a flight from the U.S. to England last week to attend my brother's wedding due to some visa complications. Wait a second. How could you have visa complications to England? Okay, I discovered I was unable to go and had to call Expedia to cancel the flight. I received a credit and a timeline to use that credit within a certain period of time. Ideally, I would still love to get that money back, but if there's no chance of that, can I persuade Delta to extend the use of my credit? It expires in a couple of months. It can't expire in a couple of months if the wedding was just last week. You're given a year in which to use the ticket. I don't understand. I still don't even understand how you could have a visa problem going from the United States to England unless you're a fugitive from justice from, let's say, Sri Lanka. So, Luke, I don't know what to tell you except email me again and I'll try to help you, but the information you gave me isn't enough for me to even go on. Here's one from JJ in Phoenix. Question on airfare prices. The best time, Wednesday 1 a.m., is that Eastern time? I live in Arizona. The answer, JJ, is it's based on the time zone in which the airline itself is headquartered, where their reservation center is. So if you live in Los Angeles and you want to book a ticket, it's 1 minute after midnight Eastern time. Well, that would be 1 minute after 9 p.m., if the airline was Delta-based in Atlanta. It would be 1 minute after 10 o'clock at night if the airline is American because they're in the central time zone. So figure out the time zone where your airline is based, and that's the time you call 1 minute after midnight on that Wednesday morning. Okay? And here's one from Lisa. She goes, I think I've heard you say before that there is a certain time of week that is best for shopping for airfares, but there is a certain time of year that is best for airfare shopping. We are looking to book air to Hawaii for May of 2012. Well, the answer is yes to both of those, and they're both very different answers, Lisa. The first one goes back to even JJ's question, which is the time of the day and the day of the week. It's 1 minute after midnight on Tuesday night, actually 12:01 a.m. Wednesday morning, again, in the time zone where the airline is based. That's the best time to book for airfares. Now, you said the best time of the year, that's best for airline shopping. Well, that's a little bit more of a confusing answer because we got one coming up in just 3 days. It's one of the two dead weeks of the year. There's the week right after Thanksgiving, right? Our dysfunctional family get-together. We're recovering from that. And there's the week right after what we're about to experience this weekend, New Year's Eve, when people are simply just recovering. That's the best time to buy airfare for that 10-day period. Hawaii is a different ball of wax because There's no seasonality left of the Hawaii airfare market. It's relatively steep these days. It's considered a leisure market, but also everybody wants to go there, very popular. So the fares tend to be higher than other leisure destinations like Orlando or Branson, Missouri, or Las Vegas. So the best time is usually 45 days out. So I would say sometime in the end of March, if you're thinking of going in May, is when you want to look for it. And as long as it's not over Easter, which it wouldn't be, or Memorial Day weekend, I think you got a shot. So that would be my answer for you on that one. And here's one from Sarah in Miami. And Sarah writes, my question is about Egypt. I listen to you and you say to go even during conflict. But when do you caution people not to go? Well, very simple. Let's define the word conflict. If they're rioting in Tahrir Square, which is basically a huge, large square in one city, does that mean it's not safe to go to Egypt or Alexandria or down to Luxor or go on the Nile? No. If they're having a demonstration in the square in front of the Grand Britannia in Athens, does that mean you shouldn't go to Greece? No. We're here in Thailand. I mean, most of my friends didn't want to come here last year when there was a four square block area that were big, heavy protests. Guess what? Four square blocks. That's it. Nothing was happening where we are in Krabi. Nothing was happening in Phuket. Nothing was happening up in Chiang Mai or Chiang Rai. It was a piece of cake. So you need to get a map, and you need to realize that unless someone tells you that martial law has been declared and tanks are rolling, and even then in Thailand I'd still go for other reasons, but let's not get too crazy. The answer is you go. Now, you said, when does it be too risky to go? Very simple. There are only about three or four places in the world I wouldn't go, and those are the places where no one's in control, right? Would I go to North Korea? In a heartbeat. Why? I know who's in control. Would I go to Somalia? Nope. Don't know who's in control. Would I go to parts of the Congo or parts of Chechnya? No, I don't know who's in control. But I've just run out of places where I wouldn't go. So there you have it. So I'm not telling you to go, you know, to go brazenly into armed conflict. I'm just saying do your homework, get a little common sense, go buy a map, and then you don't go with God, you go with me. Sometimes that's better. We'll be back with more Peter Greenberg Worldwide from Phule Bay in Krabi, Thailand, right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg coming to you from Phule Bay in Krabi in Thailand. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. Earlier in the show, we were talking to Richard Walden about natural disasters and how people can get involved in volunteer vacations. And, of course, some flooding and some tsunami stuff, the natural disaster stuff that seems to be going all over the world. And then there are the folks who go after the big waves, who really want to seek out the biggest waves in the ocean. And one of them is now our guest. He's the author of Ghost Wave, The Discovery of Cortes Bank and the Biggest Wave on Earth. His name, Chris Dixon. Hey, Chris.
Good morning. How are you doing, Peter?
I'm doing fine. I mean, 100 miles off the coast of Southern California, you'll find the Cortes Bank, right?
Correct. It is it's essentially the outermost channel island. It just happens to be, at this point in geologic history, between 100 feet and about 6 to 12 feet below the surface, depending on the tide. It's a really massive, basically a mesa out in the middle of the deep blue sea. Unbelievable place.
And basically, in order to find this wave, that takes a little doing, but then you got to get to the wave. And what I find fascinating about this is you go out on a boat, you transfer to jet skis that tow you and you're bored. And, you know, once you get on that wave, there's no getting off. I mean, you're on for the ride.
excuse me, that's absolutely true. It was funny listening to your last segment talking about places where you're not in control. I don't think I've ever felt as not in control in my life as going out and being on a jet ski. I didn't surf it, but I was on a ski and was up close and personal to these waves that were, you know, six stories tall. And it's just a surreal place. And if you wipe out when it's really big out there, the expanse of white water, of, you know, the sort of caldera on the inside, can just hold you down until you drown or they, you know, they've lost surfboards out there that they just haven't been able to find. They either, you know, maybe disappear into the hull of a ship that's apparently underneath the waves, and or they can't find them because it's such a huge, massive playing field of surf and whitewater. It's crazy.
Well, I learned my lesson on a somewhat smaller wave. You know, I learned how to surf on Sandy Beach in Hawaii, and also out near Sunken Forest on Fire Island in New York. And so I thought I knew what I was doing. Ha! So I went to the North Shore of Hawaii one day on Sunset Beach, and I decided I'd go out there and try a wave. Well, what I learned, and you just mentioned about holding you down, when you surf on the East Coast, and even on Sandy Beach, if you wipe out, you know you're going to stay down for like 25 seconds or so, and then you just kind of get up.
Right.
And you know you're going to get creamed. You let the wave take you where you're going to go, then you come up. Not on the North Shore. On the North Shore, once you're down, the gods are saying to you, you're not getting up, buddy. You're not coming back up. Goodbye. See you later. And then if you're lucky, the wave literally throws you up on the beach with sand in every orifice of your body with a message from the gods saying, don't come back. Well, I got the message. I didn't come back. Now, multiply that by about 100, and now we're talking about the wave you're talking about, right?
Yeah, I mean, it basically, you know, you've seen this wave that Garrett McNamara recently surfed in Portugal. Well, the strange thing about the Cortez Bank is it's actually capable of producing a surfable wave 150 feet high, and that is not out of it's not out of the realm of actual possibility, because there's a magnifier effect on this weird, you know, shoal. It actually gathers ocean swell energy almost like the rays of a magnifying glass. And if you were to take a 30-foot open ocean swell, which might happen once every 50 years in those latitudes, you could easily have a wave 150 feet high, and it's surely happened. And in 2008, a group of guys went out and saw waves 100 feet high and rode waves, which one of which is still the current standing world record at 77 feet. That was Mike Parsons. They saw waves surely in excess of 100 feet, and I've seen photos of some of the ones that they were up
against. Okay, I got to ask you the stupid question. Stupid,
sure.
Stupid question. Everything being relative, can you surf a wave 100 feet tall?
Yeah, it's, you know, you actually start to bump into physics, because once you get into the 90-foot range, you start to get a condition of cavitation where the water is going so fast against the fins of your surfboard that it creates a shock wave, a cavitation, almost like an airplane getting ready to break through the sound barrier. So they really are having to try to refine their equipment, you know, at this point, and there's not a whole lot of opportunities to do that because the waves just don't get that big anywhere in the world that often. So
I have a solution. There's a very simple solution to this, Chris. Wear a jetpack and hope for the best.
There you go. Or put one on the bottom of your board.
That's right. Be a rocket man. When in doubt, just, you know, hit the eject button and rocket out of there, because there's no way I'm gonna surf anywhere near that without that kind of backup, right? It's sort of like the parachute.
Well, you know, and it's interesting. I think that it's easy to get into the sort of trouble of technology, you know, out at a place like Cortez, because when I was there the last time, we almost got taken out by a huge wave.
Unbelievable. Chris Dixon, the author of Ghost Wave, The Discovery of Cortez Bank and the Biggest Wave on Earth. Great book. Love to read the book. Ain't gonna surf the wave. That music means we're out of time for the show. Mike Worrell doing the engineering work again. Jeff Ryder back on the East Coast. Shelly Goncharowski, our chief producer. Roberta Pellacci here at the hotel. Of course, the fabulous Estelita Sebeto and Anna Henriquez. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next year.
Next year!
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com.